Lies with Sarah Schaefer is a production of WNYC Radio.
Not again. Curtis, where are my glasses? No, you had them last. I took them off to put my mascara on because I like to wear makeup for radio. And no, they're not in here. I'm looking all around and they are not in here. No, you... What? Oh. They're on my head. Oh, man. I do that. I mean, what is it? Every time? Every week? I'm sorry. It is your fault, though. Welcome to Lies. On each episode of Lies, we probe the mind of a fascinating public figure, leaving no stone unturned and no truth told. I'm Sarah Schaefer. Today, my guest is one of my personal influences, comedian and writer Michael Ian Black. Michael has starred in shows like The State, Ed, Stella, VH1's I Love the series, and Burning Love. He co-authored the book America, You Sexy Bitch, A Love Letter to Freedom with Meghan McCain, and is currently co-hosting the TBS game show Trust Me, I'm a Game Show Host. Michael, hello.
Hi.
We've only met a couple of times, and I have to be honest, I'm a little nervous.
Don't be.
Well, it's wonderful to sit down with you for a real conversation because I am a huge fan.
Well, thank you, and I am nothing if not honest.
You have come to the right place. Now, I don't know if this is the right way to start this, and I know you get this all the time, but here goes, okay. Like many teenage girls at the time, I was in love with you when I was 13. I got to put it out there. I mean, I just would feel weird not saying that.
No, and I'm glad you did because I remain in love with a lot of 13-year-old girls.
I mean, I'm not 13-year-old anymore.
No, so. And I'm not attracted to you and wouldn't be.
Likewise.
Right.
It's interesting how your tastes change, right?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, like now I would never. I mean,
no.
You know.
Right.
I hate to ask you this, but can you just please, I mean, just do a little bit of like $250 worth of pudding.
Right.
Like, could you just do like...
I'll do the famous catchphrase from $250 worth of pudding.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all, we got $250 worth of pudding here. Come and get it.
Oh, that was, I mean, it's like I'm back.
It swept
back
the nation.
In middle school.
It really swept the nation
God.
Like wildfire.
That is so great. Wow. Yeah. And I'm sure people ask you to do that
to
all
this
the
day,
time.
I don't like to do it. You asked. I'm happy to do it for you because I know you're a fan.
Thank you.
But yeah, it really swept. You know, I mean, and there were T-shirts, and there were keychains, and there was that famous Super Bowl stunt, and all of it.
The movies. Everything.
Yes.
I just...
And after a while, I felt like come and get it began to define me in a way that I wasn't comfortable with because I didn't want to be the come and get it guy.
Yeah.
So I walked away. I walked away from the state.
But you somehow managed to find your way, you know?
Well, I didn't walk away from showbiz and I didn't walk away from comedy. What I walked away from was success, fame, money. And an opportunity to express myself artistically. But everything else I kept.
What's left?
Anger. Insecurity. Those are the main
anger
two things.
Yeah. Because, I mean, as a comedian, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty much all that's left.
I'm a husk.
Oh.
I'm a husk.
Oh, wow.
But what's nice about being a husk is you can fill me with whatever you want. That's why the tamale is such a staple of the Southwest diet, because you start with the husk, but then you can fill it with whatever ingredients you want. So if you want me to be a beef tamale, I can be a beef tamale.
And, you know, they make dessert tamales, too.
I can be your dessert tamale.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because you have a children's book out, Chicken Cheeks.
Mm-hmm. I have a bunch of children's books.
You're vocal about being a father.
I am.
I'm curious, how did you explain to your children that daddy is a comedian? I mean, how tough was that conversation?
Obviously, that's not the kind of thing you want to just spring on a child.
Mm-mm.
I had to explain to them that, you know, daddy doesn't have a regular job. Daddy's a comedian. Daddy makes people laugh. My kids, you know, I think they took it about as well as they could take it. You know, when I showed them how babies are made, That was a more awkward conversation.
Wait, you showed them?
Yeah, well, you know, my kids
are... What do you mean, showed
well,
them?
Well, you know, a lot of kids learn by either reading or hearing or in a tactile way. My kids learn best by observation. So when it came time to have the talk, I sat them down and I said, you know, you're old enough now, you're 8 and you're 6, and you need to understand how babies are made.
Okay.
So rather than scaring them with all the clinical terms and what have you, I sat them down, and then their mother and I, we just showed them.
Oh, my God.
And it was uncomfortable. I'm not going to lie to you. It was uncomfortable for everybody. But, you know.
Now they know.
Now they know. 9 months later, they really knew.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, we gave that one away. But you understand the point that I'm
yeah,
making.
Yeah, right, right. Okay, you claim to have started the first ever Twitter war mm-hmm. with LeVar Burton in 2009. And ever since, you have been actively feuding with many well-known sorry.
You're terrible at this. You're terrible at reading.
And ever since, you've been actively feuding with many well-known personalities on Twitter. A particularly heated exchange occurred recently with Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
And I have some of it here. If you don't mind, I'll read some of it.
Okay.
It began when she tweeted, "Since we started the Let's Move initiative, I've been looking for as many ways as possible to help families and kids lead healthier lives." You responded.
All right, let me defend my response.
Okay.
When I said, in your case, more like let's move, I never thought that she would take it to mean that I think she's a cow. You know?
I know. I am surprised that she engaged in such a lengthy back and forth with you.
She was very offended.
Very. I mean, she really hurled some whoppers at you.
Oh, yeah. You know, and in fairness, you know, I've had a lot of time to think about what I said.
Mm.
She's a beautiful woman. She is in no way, shape, or form a cow.
No.
And for me to just hurl weight joke after weight joke after
weight joke
at Michelle Obama, of all people, our first lady.
One of the things she said to you, not to bring up old wounds, but, oh, hey, Michael, how's your little comedy career going, comedy in quotes?
Right.
Sorry I haven't read your book yet. I'm busy co-running The Free World.
Mm-hmm.
Did that sting?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said it didn't, especially because I had sent her an advanced copy of the book and she had promised me that she would read it, you know? I knew her when she was Michelle Robinson. Before she got into public life, Michelle, we called her Shay Shay, I don't want to say she was a party girl. She wasn't. I don't want to mischaracterize her, but she was always fun. She was always up. She was always the one who said, you know, it would get to be, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, and you'd say, "I'm tired. I want to head home." And she'd say, "But there's another showing of Smurfs. Let's go see Smurfs." And you know, you would do it because it was Shay Shay. And you'd always be glad you did. And then she met a guy. And she starts bringing around
like
this. She starts bringing around this guy, Barry. And Barry doesn't think I should stay out so late. And Barry, you know, has very specific ideas about how my arms should look. And Barry doesn't want me to eat so bad. And the next thing you know, Shay Shay becomes Michelle. And Barry turns out to be Barry Goldblatt, a Jewish guy that she was dating.
Oh, wow.
Nice guy. You know, they broke up and she married Barack Obama.
Yeah. I mean, the first boyfriend is the one that makes you into the person that...
Right. He molded her.
He molded her for Barack.
He really molded her,
in a way. Yeah. So, Michael, you were once part of a famous comedy team, but now you perform alone. Is that lonely, difficult?
It can be lonely. You know, one of the things about being in the state, which was my sketch comedy troupe, was we always had each other's backs. We operated, you know, as a team. When I struck out on my own, all of that support went away. So there are moments when I'm on stage and I feel that aloneness what I will do is I'll catch the eye of somebody in the crowd and I'll say, will you come up on the stage with me and just be with me? Just be with me for the duration of the show.
Oh,
and this is generally,
beautiful.
It's a beautiful thing when
and
it happens.
And the audience member just sits up there, stands.
You know, I'll give you an example. This happened, God, not 2 weeks ago. I was in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm performing. I get that feeling, that deep loneliness. It's almost an existential despair. I catch the eyes of somebody in the crowd. It's a woman. I don't know. She's maybe 20, 21 years old. Brown hair, blue eyes, gorgeous figure. Perfect skin. And I say, you know, will you come up on stage with me? I mean, it doesn't matter what she looks like.
Okay. Yeah.
That's irrelevant to the story.
Right. No.
But I say, will you come up on stage with me? Because I'm just feeling this loneliness. And you know, she's blushing. You know, she doesn't know if I'm serious, I'm not serious. Her friends kind of prod her up. It gets a big laugh. Mm. She stands up. She's got a dynamite figure. Just a dynamite figure. And I say, you know, I bring her up on stage. I say, you know, what's your name? It's Beth. I say, okay, Beth, do me a favor, real quick, turn around. She turns around. I stop her when she gets about halfway around. What a can on this babe. Just a terrific can.
Okay. I mean, now you said the appearance doesn't. What is she
doing?
No,
it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant.
Oh, yeah.
But,
okay.
But
so,
God, the can on this chick, you know. So I have her up on the stage and I feel better immediately. So I say, Beth, you know, you've really done the trick. Do me a favor. Go wait backstage because you're my good luck charm. And, you know, I can see the eye of the guy she's with and, you know, his eyes kind of narrow, you know.
And I get all beady.
And I make a joke about it, big laugh. So she goes off. Show ends. I go backstage and she's there in the green room. I close the door. Knock, knock, knock. And it's security. And the security guy goes, you know, Beth's boyfriend is here. Should I send him back? I say, do me a favor. Give me 25 minutes because I'm feeling very lonely right now. And Beth, and this girl could not have been sweeter, very sweet, very susceptible to suggestion. And I spent about 25 minutes with her. At the end of those 25 minutes, they bring the boyfriend back, autographs, pictures all around. And I tell you, I felt great. I really felt great. I felt sleepy, but I felt great.
And what exactly happened in those 25 minutes?
I don't know that it matters. You know, what was
does
important?
Does it though? Because
your question was about loneliness and your question was about, do I ever feel lonely on the road? And I'm trying to answer you honestly. And yes, I do. And this is a good example of what I do.
Just be honest. You did something. Y'all like...
Well, sure. We had a great time. We you know, there was a lot of... I'll tell you, 20, 25 minutes after the show... the door's open, there's pictures, there's autographs, there's a firm handshake, goodbye.
There's this gap of the 25 minutes. Yeah. Let's be honest.
Do you remember when I said I closed the door?
Yeah.
So when I closed the door, I wouldn't want to betray her trust by telling you what happens in those 20, 25 minutes.
Oh, no, I don't want to know. I'm not saying you're not telling me what happened. I'm saying, let's be honest. It was like more like 5 to 7 minutes.
Oh.
Let's be real.
Well, there's snack time, right?
Right.
Then we might wash it down with a Dr. Pepper.
Okay, that's maybe 5 minutes.
Well, that's 5 to 7 minutes right there. Then there's chit-chat time.
Okay.
You know, there's a little, I saw you out there, you looked so cute, and, you know, I just had to call you up on stage, and is it hot in here? It's long here. You know, anyway, A to Z, we're probably talking 20, 25 minutes.
You are someone who has done an enormous amount of advertisements and integrated marketing. And
yes.
Has there ever been a moment when you've looked in the mirror and just been like, God... You are such a sellout.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, thankfully, I don't have that level of introspection that would allow that. So when somebody offers me, I don't know, hey, Michael, you want to, you know, recruit kids to join the Army? I go, sure, absolutely.
Kids.
I work with kids.
I'm getting that theme here, and I didn't realize.
Well, I wrote the children's book. I'm a father, and the Army, you know, comes to me and says, we got this idea for kids. Do you want to work on it? Yeah, I'm happy to. You know, we're working with Hamas. We're gonna start these programs for kids.
Wait a minute, Hamas? Mm-hmm. What army are we talking about? The U.S. Army?
No. The U.S. Army? God, no. They would never do something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
No. This is Hamas.
And as someone who is Jewish, you went along with this.
Yeah, I mean, politically and morally, I condemn it in the strongest possible terms, you know? But as an entertainer, sometimes you have to separate the political and the moral from the financial, you see?
Yeah.
And so it was important to me to pursue it for financial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of the work we did.
Yeah.
I'm proud of the work we did.
You're able to support your family.
Mm-hmm. I'm able to support my family. I'm able to support my secret family. And so it's,
Your secret family.
Well, I have a secret family in Tampa.
Well, you know, this is, I mean, a lot of people listen to this. It's one of the most popular radio shows.
My wife is deaf. My secret wife is not. But she doesn't listen to radio.
I think you've really thought this through.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
I'm guessing it's fine. But so, yeah, I'm able to support my family, my secret family. And when an opportunity comes along, like the Hamas Initiative for Children, it's very, very hard to say no. And why would I? Why would I? Because they gave me so much creative freedom.
Okay. What would you do if your son came to you and said, "Dad, I want to be a comedian"?
I'd give him a hug. And I'd say, "Maddox, the only hope that I have for you in this world is that you be happy and that you be healthy. And being a comedian isn't going to lead to either of those outcomes."
Hmm.
So, no. I'd just say no.
I didn't mean to, you know, bring up such... I mean, I could see you getting...
I'm getting
a
little... I'm a little emotional about it, but it's only because I wish my parents had given me this kind of guidance that I could give to either of my kids, Apple or Maddox.
That's so interesting that their names are Apple and Maddox.
Why?
Well, Gwyneth Paltrow's child is named Apple.
Uh-huh.
And Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt's child is named Maddox.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was that just coincidence that they were named after the celebrities'
kids? Well, my
kids
are... Is it a coincidence? My kids weren't originally named Apple and Maddox.
Well, what were their original names?
David and David.
Daughter named David.
Uh-huh.
And how did you distinguish between
the
two?
She was David.
So David and David.
Yeah.
And then what triggered changing their names?
I just saw something in a magazine, I think. And I got inspired.
Us Weekly or
something. I don't know what magazine it was, but it was a magazine or something. And I saw it and I thought, oh, that's a good name. And went through the proper channels, and now, you know, it's Apple and Maddox.
What are your secret children's names? Or is that secret?
It's embarrassing. I have two kids in my secret family.
Mm-hmm.
Apple and Maddox.
Oh, my God.
It's
How
embarrassing.
How do you keep up with this?
Well, because I pronounce them differently.
I have to hear. How do you pronounce them?
Apple.
Apple.
And my ducks.
My ducks.
My ducks.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for your time today. This has been very illuminating, fascinating. Your candor and your honesty was just wonderful. Wonderful.
Well, Sarah, I want to thank you again for the opportunity to come on your really terrific program and just, for once, tell the truth.
Yeah.
Lies is produced by Curtis Fox and Sharon Mashihi. Our sound engineer is Bill O'Neill. Chris Bannon is the executive producer. Lies was created by Sarah Schaefer and is produced by WNYC New York and distributed by Nerdist Industries.